So welcome. We're going to talk about onboarding today. The intention of this session is to make sure that you come out of this with actionable steps that you want to take and some clearer understanding of what you would like to do for your particular onboarding at your firm. So Jackie, do we want to do introductions? Everybody knows you.
Yeah, well, hopefully. And if not, I hope to meet all of you at some point while you're here. I joined Limitless back in November as Chief Operations Officer and also Operations Coach for the members. Over 24 years experience working in RIA's operations side. And pretty much anything to do with human resources, processes, workflows, tech stacks, anything operations, I've pretty much handled it at some point. So definitely looking forward to working with all of you.
Yeah. And I'm Jared Music. So I'm the CEO of Destiny Capital and Entrepreneur Aligned. And so as we go through this presentation today, we're going to kind of take it from the perspective of when you're in the advisor seat and thinking about that client service component of what you're doing and connection with clients, I'll try and take that side of it. And Jackie is really going to focus on, great, from an operations standpoint, how are you able to execute these successfully? So the question that we have up on the screen, what is your biggest frustration or challenge? Would really love to take a pause here for about 30 seconds. And if everyone can write that down, where are you really stuck?
And for the virtual people, feel free to type in your answers in the chat as well. All right. So do we want to share that right now or revisit that probably?
We're going to take the back half of this and do it as a workshop format where we're actually going to work through some of these pieces. So just hang on to that till the back half.
Okay. So what we wanted to start off with is, as most of you are aware, there's a space that exists from your prospect process, and that is where you are building awareness, you are creating interest, you're giving the prospect a chance to say yes to you, and the time from when they enter into your service model. And your service model is your sustainable system. It's where you are taking the time to use surges, model meetings, value adds, anything to deliver longer term value during the relationship. And I just kind of laugh because I've seen it all happen where it could go sideways. There is that messy middle space, you know, that we've experienced between those two stages. And it's messy because you're spending a lot of time, energy, doing a lot of handholding with the clients. And what we would like to cover today are some best practices to not only elevate certain structures within your processes, but also elevate the experience, not just for your clients, but for you and your team as well.
And so as you're thinking about your onboarding process, really try and practice that empathy, right? What is your client experiencing as they're going through this process with you? You're talking to them about incredibly personal details. You're asking for full disclosure of financial information, and you're asking them to trust you with the future direction of their financial life. It's a huge ask. So as you're going through, really keep some of these things in mind because they may be running through your client's head. Where's my money? What's the fee? Who do I call? They're really trying to think through what's going to happen to me as I'm engaging in this process. And so you're really needing to message and be very clear about here's what's happening. Here's what the benefit is. Here's about what you're going to go through in terms of the process itself. So always try and keep the client perspective in mind.
So when it comes to systematizing your onboarding service model, it's a lot of RIAs or advisors, there's a bit of a pushback. It's a love-hate relationship that you have with systematizing because there's that fear of making it too sterile, taking the authenticity out of it. And what we hope that you get from this as we go through these steps is there are two components to it. There's a qualitative side and a quantitative side. So here with this slide, we just want to talk about like how important the welcome process is, the onboarding from the moment that actually probably beforehand when they agree to become your client, the clock starts on building that trust equity. So what can you do behind the scenes to instill that confidence, continue that confidence with your new client? So things such as, and we'll go into further detail with this, but the welcome kit, where it's the kickoff, it's the excitement. You're giving them information on what this process is going to look like and how you plan to deliver that value to them.
And so as you're implementing the plan, look at the different meetings that you're going to have as part of your onboarding process. Are you breaking out retirement planning or tax planning or investment management into separate sessions? Are you consolidating those into a single session? Are you doing some of them where the client has homework projects and they're uploading things into their client vault? You can customize this to whatever your particular client setup is and whatever you want to create for those clients. Typically, the more complex your client household, the more you're going to want to itemize and break these things out in the onboarding process and message that clearly that you're going to have our next conversation is going to be around setting up your investment policy statement, reviewing all of your held away assets, private investments. If it's much more streamlined and simplified, you may say, great, we're going to get into investment policy statement, basic tax review, and the preliminary draft of your retirement plan. It doesn't matter. There is no right answer, but there's a right answer for your clients and for your firm. So really think about how are you going to customize, message that implementation plan, and make sure the client knows what to expect every step along the way.
And that kind of, again, we'll go into further detail on each of these steps, but even like progress reporting, it's all about consistency and setting the expectations, because when you're not setting the expectations in the client relationship, they will do it for you. So how do you take those steps to say, again, they don't need to know how the sausage is made, but this is their money. They want to know what the next steps are. And it is alleviating that piece of the unknown for them. And I like to also say scaling special, you know, as Steph likes to say. So again, how do you scale your special so that you can deliver this on a consistent basis with every new client you onboard?
And also so that your team can deliver exactly the same way that you're going to deliver. So what's the messaging copy that you're putting in to communicate what are we going to do for our next steps and what should your expectations be? The more clear you can be on building your model, the easier it is for your team to be able to implement it without you having to intervene. And so really thinking about the client perspective again, you know, we have that agreement and welcome kit stage here in the first one. And so that's building the excitement and the anticipation, right? Like we're going to help you create the change or get to the place that you want to be in your financial life. Second stage, we're doing the kickoff. Great, we have a path here. And so this is the above the line, below the line, what the client is thinking about. Progress reporting, great, we're on track. Things are being delivered, we're hitting deadlines. If we're telling the client that we're going to have this to you by X date, go ahead and remind them and say, great, we're still on track to deliver this to you by X date. Then everybody that's taking snapshots with your phones, you'll have the presentation available to download. Doesn't mean you can't, but you will get the presentation as well. So stage four, staying connected. Great. We're still implementing. We're still executing. We're on track. You never want to leave your client wondering, where are you guys at on this? Be able to put in those proactive touch points. And then trusting, right? So we're into the client service model. We continue to do what we say we're going to do, which creates accountability and trust. And that's what you're aiming for. Oh, sorry. So the question was, what does it mean for distrust, over, underserved, or lack of progress? So when Steph talks about above the line and below the line, if you're really working to stay above the line and have your clients stay above the line throughout the process, this is what they're going to be feeling. If you're missing on your client service model and your onboarding of that, they're going to be below the line. So they're going to be wondering, why am I not making progress? They're not going to trust, are you getting stuff done? Are we doing way more than what we should be doing, or are we way underserving? So if you're adhering to onboarding in the proper way, you're going to keep your clients above the line. Sorry, we'll do one more question. Yeah. So the question was, is the implementation kickoff an actual meeting, or could it be an email or something more automated? Again, I would go back to, what is your client service model and what are you seeking to provide for your client? In most cases, it's going to be a meeting. It could be a Loom video recording that you send. It could be a static YouTube to talk about the process that you put into an email workflow. There are a number of different ways you could choose to approach it, but it's going to be based on what do you want to provide to your client.
And I also did want to add to that too. A lot of times we think an update has to have actual status updates. An update could be, hi, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, just wanted to check in with you this week, because that's part of our model, our onboarding process. But there's nothing new. We are on track. And just to let them know, again, it's how do we create that sense of security for them and also simplify. And it saves you from getting that email, where are we at? Where's the transfer? And you're being proactive about it versus being reactive. So again, as Jared mentioned, using videos, even having your team do short videos, again, very personalized. And you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you know, I'm your client service associate. So it doesn't just have to come from the advisor. You can have your entire team involved in this communication loop. Oh, great. Okay.
Sorry, I clicked ahead.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So this is, I love this slide. So this is actually Adam's client onboarding workflow. And I love this slide for a couple of different purposes and reasons. It's a visual. So our minds work on visuals. We love to absorb data that way. And again, I had mentioned earlier that the onboarding, any process that you put together, there's the quantitative side and a qualitative side. What you are seeing here is the quantitative side. You're taking a really complex experience for a client. You know, it's not just the new account paperwork. It's not just the transfer process. It's the financial planning process. So you're taking these really big, scary ideas and putting them into more easily digestible modules. And what I wanted to touch upon, that the qualitative piece of things gets built into the little nooks and crannies of your quantitative piece. So for example, I use this because I really think it's original. Adam's firm does, they're located in Indiana, and they do a Taste of Indiana gift basket for all of their clients. So not only is it saying thank you for trusting us. We value you. Here's a taste of who we are. You know, here you can get to know us in a different way versus just being your financial advisor. So there are a lot of opportunities throughout this quantitative process where you can put your spin on things, finding out what the prospect likes. Are they going on trips? Do they like to travel? What are their hobbies? So again, adding that personal flair to certain stages of this, but it's important to build that into the quantitative piece because you don't want to miss that step. Again, these are really easy achievable steps in the process, but what happens is we end up, when we don't document, missing them. And right then and there, you lose really easy trust equity points.
And so when you're thinking about your process as it exists today and what you want to be able to build in the future, there is no correct answer, right? But there is a correct answer for you and your firm. And so there are resources available everywhere through Limitless. People are willing to share what their processes are. You can adapt those and make them what you need them to be able to serve what you're trying to serve. So we just included a couple different onboarding workflows here with major component steps to be able to prime your thinking about it. So what do you want to do and what do you want to execute?
There's definitely no one size fits all. And I think that's kind of the intimidating part of when you're trying to start putting together your onboarding process. And this is an example from Taylor Schulte. And again, we, as Jared mentioned, we really encourage you to go onto the website, use the resources, take them where whether you want to implement them as is and put your own spin on it, that's fine, but we encourage you to do so.
And you'll notice from Taylor's, you know, he has a get organized meeting, an investment education meeting, financial independence, legacy building, tax strategy, insurance review. He's chosen to break all of those out into different subcomponent steps because that's what's effective for him and his clients. For us at our firm, we don't do that. We tend to consolidate them down and we have an investment planning meeting and we have a retirement and financial model meeting. Everything else we handle is a lot more email, status updates, Loom videos that happens in between those events. That's what we found works best for our Destiny Capital clients. So individualize it, think about what your client expectations are and what you want to deliver to them.
Right. To touch upon in a little further detail, you know, the welcome process for the onboarding. So here at Limitless, we love welcome kits for a few different reasons. As Jared mentions, it creates excitement for the client, but it also sets the tone. It introduces the client to the rest of your team. So some of the RIAs I worked with, we had a kind of a contact sheet. Here's who you would contact on the team for disbursements. Here's who you would contact for trading. So again, takes kind of, it's more of that ensemble practice approach where you are helping to educate the client on how your team works and where you are giving more autonomy to your team members versus all of the questions flowing through to you, and then you having to divert it to the correct person. So again, a couple of different, I'm kind of taking the ops approach to it where I've seen the welcome kit really help increase capacity for the advisors because again, you're training the clients on who on your team services what in what capacity.
And again, this is an opportunity to set clear expectations. So as Jackie talked about, if this is where you go for like cash needs or requesting a disbursement, right, you're able to train them up front so that they aren't necessarily reaching out to you as the lead advisor or reaching out to your lead advisor for those tasks. They know, hey, I need to go directly to Jenny for this and she takes care of me, right? So opportunities to set expectations and be able to give them tangible products that they can retain. So you can give them these to them as either printed documents. You can put PDFs inside their client vault. You can send an email that they can refer back to. Just thinking about setting those clear expectations about the relationship that you're about to have together.
And I'm just curious. So quick question, anyone want to share the last, just think of the most recent onboarding experience that you had. Did you set clear expectations? No. Okay. Does someone want to share what would have been, what makes you feel that, Tracy, what makes you feel that you didn't share or set those clear expectations?
Tracy, just for everybody virtual, Tracy said that there was a lot of confusion on behalf of the client that just indicated that there were some missteps there.
All right, great. Did anyone else want to share an example? If not, we'll move on. All right. I was just curious but I saw a lot of people nodding no. So you do realize that you can improve on that section. So we'll move on.
And so again, setting client engagement standards. So what's the common and clear language about how you are going to refer to certain things? What are the expectations that you have of the client? This is really your one and only easy opportunity to get client buy-in about what you expect of them. You can always try and reset it later, but it's a lot more difficult when you've already established those norms and those boundaries. So if we're asking that the client is proactive about notifying us when things change for them, or if we're going to request that they upload documents to their client portal versus us sending them a document checklist every time, right? You can set all of those behavior norms and standards right at the kickoff to your onboarding process. It's much easier than retraining and resetting those down the road.
Yeah. And just to touch upon like the last question, it's because I've experienced, and Jared's probably experienced, when you do have that setback of the onboarding process not being smooth, it just makes you feel like you're coming up from behind. You're always trying to catch up in that relationship. And again, just missing the easy trust points of, you know, you made the right decision. You're with the right firm, and this is why. Okay. So implementation kickoff again, you know, this slide represents to me is communication and expectation. So implementation meetings, there is no right cadence for meetings. Again, it's like what Jared said, it's what works for your firm and for your clients. But what I want to really impress upon you is it's the consistency of those meetings, it's the consistency of the schedule. So when you set that for your model, of course, you'll have one-off, you know, moments that happen. But for the most part, every new client you bring on board should have that same experience. And, you know, just to kind of go back on the workflow process, I really do, when I've built out workflows, I do involve the team, because again, there's that sense of clarity on the roles and responsibilities. Everyone knows who's handling what step of the process, and then they have a sense of ownership to that. So, you know, for implementation meetings, again, it doesn't have to all fall on you as the advisors. It could be your team. It could be your right-hand people that are doing the check-in meetings. They can do the 30-day meeting to see, is everything running smoothly? Were you able to log in? So again, the purpose of your meetings and the cadence of your meetings is just going to depend on what works for your firm. Account opening and transfers. This one I kind of laughed at because it used to be such an automatic response of 5 to 7 business days. And since this merger that we won't really talk about has happened, it kind of, I don't know how that's looking, but again, it's the client doesn't need to know that ACAP process involves this. They want to know, my money's in transit. When is it going to get in your hands? Because there is that real sense of uncertainty, because they'll log into their old account, they'll see the zero balance, they log into the new account, they see a zero balance, and panic sets in. So again, it's how do you add that, you know, just sense of comfort and we've got this. And if you just let them know what that timeline is and set those expectations, you can avoid a lot of those questions and panic moments. And COI connections. So this is a really big area for lost opportunity. When you have those referrals from clients, I think a lot of advisors, the automatic response is a thank you email or a thank you phone call or a gift card. But what about educating, especially if it's a new COI, educating them to have a longer term relationship with them, sending them their own welcome kit. This is how our firm works. Thank you for entrusting your client to us. This is what your client is going to experience with us. And this is the journey that they're on. It gives the COI definitely more confidence to keep referring to you because they know how you work. So again, taking these opportunities and instead of just saying thank you, what are the moments you can help build that relationship?
And it's also a great opportunity to get introduced to new COIs. So if your client is coming in and they've been referred by a fellow client, they may not be working with an attorney or a CPA or another professional that you've engaged with in the past. So you have an opportunity to stand out that says, great, we get an authorization to disclose form sign so we can share information. We created a portal login for you so that we have a partner folder inside the client's account where we're going to both put important documents. We'd like to do a relationship review with you every X number of months or quarters to make sure that we're still on the same page about the service that we're mutually offering to this client. Nobody does that stuff. If you do, you have the opportunity to stand out and develop those new relationships and figure out if these are COIs that you want to be able to work with in the future. So tons of opportunity there, but it doesn't tend to happen in the moment. None of us get inspired to say, let me deepen this connection with this CPA. But if you have the process that requires you to do that, it sets you up for success.
Yeah. And this is just another slide again, just to impress upon you. It's taking the steps and building into your workflow. How do you take this big, scary journey that the client is on? They don't understand they've hired you. You're the expert. They don't understand financial planning. They don't understand all the nuances. So how do you take these big, seemingly complicated pieces and make them more understandable for the client? And we do that through the implementation meetings, through the onboarding, through following standard practices, using your CRMs to build in your workflow. So every team member is crystal clear on what their part is during each step of the process. How do you account for COI information, putting that information into your CRMs, and just using your tech stacks, even using things like Calendly or Acuity? They can schedule your meetings and keep that, so you don't have to remember in the back of your head or manually plan all of this stuff. But you can also customize different software systems to have a more personalized touch. And even like with the meetings with Calendly, we started implementing something where we reached out to the client to say, hey, your meeting is coming up. Is there anything that you would like to talk about? And they would send us agenda items that they want to discuss. So it becomes more collaborative and more productive. And you're not running in and out of the meeting to ask questions, you know, from your team. And again, just a more positive experience. It's all about the experience that you would want to not only deliver to your clients, but to have if you were your own client.
And then again, being very client-centric when you're thinking about your progress reporting, I think this is an area where you can make this as rigid and systematized as you want to, or as flexible as you want to. And again, what are you trying to get out of the specific action? So weekly emails, for our firm, what we've decided is we want to do bi-weekly emails during the first 2 months of their onboarding process. So every other week, we have a task that comes up inside Redtail that says, hey, client status report needed. And then we're going to go through, and there's a format that we want to do to be able to fill out that status report. We've given our teams the freedom that they can use Loom as a tool to be able to do that if they feel like that's a better way to screen share and review certain things. So if a client has 9 account transfers that are in process and we're working on tax collaboration with their CPA for the first time, that might be a good opportunity to do a Loom video as opposed to, hey, not a whole lot has happened. Just wanted to let you know we're still on it. These 3 things are still in our court. This one thing is still in your court, and here's the action you need to take. That's probably a great email that you can do. So whatever system you want to set up, you can build it to be able to create that engagement however you choose to do that. All right. And so again, I just keep banging away on this. Imagine you're that client, right? How are you going to feel in these different moments? So they're thinking, and this is if you don't give them something to think about, these are the thoughts that can come up, right? Everything that's going to go wrong can, or Murphy's Law is really anything that can happen will happen. But I think we all tend to apply it in the negative context, right? So the second I transfer my accounts and I can't do anything with them, markets are going to start tanking, right? While the account transfer is in process. How are you going to get ahead of that if that's a worry that you feel like that particular client or your type of clients have? And being able to say like, great, we're going to be able to update you as things are going, transfers, we're going to let you know where everything is at so that they're never wondering, is my money stuck? Is it not coming over? And messaging that when you're going through this transition, you're going to have moments where there's anxiety and you're scared. This is why our team is here. Please reach out to us. We are here to talk to you anytime that you need us. Just being able to give them the permission to call or email or text you whenever they need you is a huge burden off their shoulders.
So this slide is an example. Actually, this is from one of our leaders, members, service model transition. So this is an actual deliverable that they've put together for their clients that explains this is what your service model is going to look like. It's a visualization tool that they use for their clients, but you can include as much or as little detail on these. But again, it's just using to communicate and set those expectations of this is what your relationship with us is going to look like. And these are the timelines for every step of the process.
All right, back to people, process, platforms, and packaging, right? So thinking through what your system is for onboarding and what you want it to be through each of these individual lenses is really going to help set you up. So who are the people that are going to be involved on your team? Do you have all of them today? I know I don't, right? We've got a team of 13 people, and I know who the next four hires are when we have the revenue to be able to justify those. And so even though I would love to have some of them involved in this onboarding process in a different capacity, we don't have it today. So who's doing it today? And because we have less resource, that means we're skinning down portions of it from what I think like the five diamond star, whatever level would be, right? What do we do that's really effective, that's really consistent, and that we can execute on every time? And who are the people that are going to be involved in that? Process allows all of us mere mortals to be able to execute amazingly well. You never want to build this in a place where you have to have a superhuman effort to create the outcome. A process allows average people on an average day to do exceptional work. So keep that in mind as you're building this. The process should be simple. It should be actionable, where anybody on your team, when you have them slotted into those roles, can be successful. The platforms, you're probably using CRM. You're probably using email delivery tool and possibly some other things like Loom, Calendly, Acuity, some of those scheduling softwares that really take burden off of your team. It doesn't have to use every tech platform that is available. Use the right ones and use them consistently. And then packaging. We all love the beautiful welcome kits. We love the beautiful workbooks. It gives us a place to direct our conversations and our energy and our thinking. And it does that for your clients too. It doesn't mean that you need to hire a design firm to totally rebuild everything that you want to do. You can write something out in a Word doc and in a spreadsheet and go find a designer on Fiverr, and they'll do it for $90 and get you most of the way there. So there are little things that you can do that move these processes forward without having to spend the next 6 months of your life or $20,000 to redo them.
And I think that's a really important point. It's a lot of times it's analysis paralysis because it seems like it's such a big undertaking. And doing these process workflows, it's just that. It's a process and just a starting point. And what's helpful too, and Jared, when you guys were putting together your workflows, did you just start off with kind of like a note version of it, kind of like a handwritten piece, and then built it out more formally? Because that's what we've done. But
yeah, I think if you have anybody working with you, a great way to do this is to write them out in a Word doc and then get time with a whiteboard, right? And okay, here's step one. Here's what's going to happen. Does this work for us currently? Is it going to break? What would cause this to fail? And really make it a collaborative process. So I totally agree.
And, you know, we touched upon this earlier, but we just have, when we say so many resources on the website, it's a little overwhelming. But again, it's get into that website, read the client onboarding guidebook. We have every step of the process documented. We have examples. We have templates. Take them, please.
We just redid ours yet again, because we're now in a place where for Destiny Capital, we have some simpler clients, we have some more complex retirement clients, and then for Entrepreneur Aligned, we work with high complexity active business owner clients. So we actually need three different variants of our onboarding process. And so what I did is I went back to the Limitless resources and said, great, what templates are available to help give us structure to think through it? So they're really a great, great place to start. All right. So we hit it pretty close. We've got 20 minutes of workshop time available. The intent of this is so that you're able to walk out of this session and out of your time today with action steps, with next steps, or key questions that you need to be able to answer. So much of this time is spent just consuming and learning and learning. We wanted to give a pause. So Jackie and I are going to be available to answer questions and walk around, but really want you guys to think about what comes next after this.
And one of the tools that we have, you'll see your worksheet on the tables and also pink and green highlighters. Just go through and think about your current process and what it looks like. And highlight in pink the items that you're not doing currently, highlight in green the items that you are doing. And again, that's just kind of the starting point to, you know, you might be further along in this than you think, and then you might find the gaps that you weren't considering before.
And Allison, for everybody attending virtually, do they have the guidebook material? Perfect. So under session content, perfect. And Jackie's going to be supporting everybody virtually. So hang on. Okay. She's coming.
Yes. I'm going to go right now.
20, 17 minutes. Ready? Go.
I always say when you sleep on it, it's a call. I feel like, yes, let's go. And then I'll put it on.
Okay, hi everyone. We have Jackie here, and she will be available to answer your questions. And you can also make sure you download the client onboarding worksheet under session resources. And I saw some questions in the chat. I won't unmute everyone. So if you want to chat, you can raise your hand or turn your camera on and just give us a visual and we'll ask to unmute. Okay, Jay. Okay, you should see something pop up. There we go. All right, and we are gonna go mute the other room so you don't hear both of them at the same time. All right.
Awesome.
Take it away, Jay.
Okay, great. Hi, Jay. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great, living the dream. How can I help?
Gee, I apologize. I jumped in late. I just got done with a meeting, so I'm an eager spectator right now.
Oh, okay, great. Well, I'm glad you were able to join. And were you able to access the worksheet under the resource section? So what we're asking everyone who's participating today is to look over that worksheet, identify, while you're looking at that worksheet, identify what your current process looks like for onboarding and going through and just making note of what you're currently doing versus what you are not currently doing, just to kind of give you a visual perspective and to get you thinking about it.
Okay. Yeah, I was able to, I don't know if you were speaking specifically to me, but yes, I was able to access that. I'll admit that I haven't taken a look at it, but I definitely will.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. All right, let's take a look at chat to see if we have Okay, nothing yet. Okay, perfect. There we go. Aaron, can you check to see? I think I clicked to ask to unmute. Can you see if you're able to? There we go. Okay, perfect.
All right. So right now, as far as the onboarding paperwork process, we print everything out and do the sign here stickies and have a big, you know, signing party.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what's the best practice if you move to a like a DocuSign type of environment? As far as like talking to the client about the paperwork, you just send it to them and let them go through everything and, you know, sign. I mean, what's the best or what's the best practices around that?
Right. That's a great question, Aaron. So it really depends on again, I know we're talking about like systematizing the process, but it really depends on the conversation that you've had with the client before that. So one of the things that we would do when we were initially onboarding a prospect is one of the questions was, do you prefer DocuSign? Do you prefer paper applications? And it's just getting more of an idea of what their comfort level is with technology, because I know a lot of the advisors are a little worried that, especially with, you know, I've heard the older clients, you know, that's kind of the excuse that they use, but the older clients will probably surprise you in being pretty tech savvy and being able to DocuSign. So what we would do as part of our onboarding is we had a digital client welcome kit. And in that kit, it would describe, you know, the next steps are going to be, you will be receiving your new account paperwork via DocuSign. And again, depends on your custodian, because I know we use TDA and Schwab. So Schwab had e-delivery or e-signature, and TDA had DocuSign, but same concept for both. But in our welcome email that we would send off to the client, welcoming them to the firm and introducing their client service associate that will be working with them, it kind of set the tone of what to expect. And once we sent that paperwork out to them, we had a process of 48 hours. If we have not received it back or heard anything back, we would do a follow-up, make sure that they were able to open it. Were they able to sign it? And at that point, if they were having difficulty, it's walking them through the tech issues and actually walking them through the signing process. But for the most part, both of those systems we were using were pretty easy to use and intuitive.
Okay. So if they were happen to be in your office and you, let's say, used an iPad or something along those lines, did you feel the need to describe what they, you know, this is what you're signing? Because, you know, it's so easy just to go down just to sign. And well, some people may be uncomfortable with that and they're, you know, just...
No, that's a great point. And we would have our client service associates walk them through that process. So the advisors would leave the room, you know, they would explain that, you know, Jane's coming in to help you sign this, and brief overview of what the paperwork is. Because again, you want to make this simple, as easy as possible, as efficient as possible. So you definitely don't want to spend an hour describing every single detail on the paperwork. I think the document we probably spent the most time outlining and really going over in detail was their agreement, just to kind of hit the high points of the agreement that we wanted them to be aware of. But typically with the paperwork, it was, you know, next you're going to sign the money link form. So it's a fairly quick process, especially if they're doing it electronically. But, you know, again, you can also package that under the heading of, here's the paperwork to set up your banking instructions on the account, to transfer your IRA account to your new IRA and open up your new IRA. So you could definitely be more general with that, because again, with the electronic signature process, it's pretty quick. So it's not like that, you know, walking them through the paper process where you probably have more of an opportunity to go into detail.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, any other questions? How's it going, guys? Okay. All right. Sharda, and then we'll go to Joe. Let me ask you to unmute, Sharda. Okay.
Yeah, there was a few of us with our hi there. There was a couple of us with our hands raised there. But I noticed a few people asked my question as well. Okay. So our biggest pain point is getting clients to give us tax returns, statements, those types of things. Yeah. So my process is I send them an email with a list of everything, and then I include a Dropbox link for them to just, you know, drop it in there. And then if you could just tell us again what you include in the COI onboarding.
Yeah. So it's almost, we created a special, it almost mimics the client welcome kit, but again, from the COI advantage, it's more of an overview of this is our firm, this is our philosophy, this is our team. And we even included some of the deliverables that we had that were very similar to kind of that service model deliverable we showed during the presentation, but it was a little more simplified than that. Again, giving, you know, from the COI's point of view, who am I dealing with? Who's the team over there? What's that experience going to look like for my clients that I'm sending over there? And then we also had a deliverable piece in there that said, these are the offerings we have for our COIs, you know, especially like CPAs, for example. We will send you tax documentation as soon as it's available. So it's kind of like what our promise was to nurture that particular relationship with that COI and really treat it more as a comprehensive relationship that we had and whatever we could take off the client's plate. So that was part of our onboarding too, to explain to the client, you know, if you give us the information, obviously the COI part we would know, but if they had an attorney they were working with, the more information that they gave us, it allowed us to service them in a more comprehensive way. But it was almost we're setting not only this is who we are, this is what we do, but this is what we're going to do working with you. Did that answer that question, Sharda? Oh. There we go.
Technology. It did. Thank you.
It's great when it works.
And then what about the frustration we have around clients getting us the, you know, information?
Yeah. So we had, and we were experiencing that same thing. So we used eMoney as our client vault. So we actually had our paraplanner reach out to our clients. That was part of our service model, and set up a call, walk them through the uploading process, like ask them to link their accounts. So that was a hand-holding process. You know, we had clients that were obviously more proactive than some others, but it really was that follow-up, but also giving them that tool of, hey, this is not only something for you to provide information to us, this is a great all-in-one system where you can see everything in one spot. So they felt like they were getting an added value, something that they could use outside of their relationship with us to link their accounts and see everything in one place and store their secure documents in the client vault. So that was what we did. And it seemed to work really well. But again, there were some clients we had to set up appointments and kind of show them how to do it. And again, our paraplanner or client service associates handled that portion. So the advisor wasn't, tasked with that particular item. So yeah, it's difficult because you feel like you're constantly following up sometimes, and you're going to get clients that just don't respond to certain requests. And it really is having that conversation with them. Again, I think it's part of the expectation, you know, it's that onboarding piece where we want to do this work for you, but there's that partnership. And what we're asking for you is to be transparent, to provide us with the documentation that we need in order to support you in the best capacity that we can. And I think when you set that tone and also give them the tools to, you know, especially the tech tools to possibly do that, I think that helps encourage them. Okay. Joe, let me, oh, you're unmuted. Great. Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, Jackie. Nice to see you.
Hi. Nice to see you too.
I have a bit of a different question. Up to this, my firm's been all digital.
Oh, great. Okay.
And when I read the piece about getting using a handwritten note, I really, really like that idea.
Yes.
So I wanted to know, are there any stationery companies that you could recommend that could actually put a company logo and make some nice little notes to send out to new clients?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what I could do, Joe, is offline send you an email with a couple of different recommendations that you could use. And it's so funny because we are in a digital world, but people still like getting mail. They still, you know, it's that personalized touch. So I'm definitely going to make a note to send you an email with those recommendations.
Great. Thank you.
Of course. All right, Kevin, let's see. How much time do we have, Allison? Okay, great. So let's see. Let's see if that worked. There you go. Hey, Kevin.
Hi. Two questions. One, with using Loom as a way to do videos to clients, how does that work on the compliance side? Do you have any recommendations there? Do you have to track it? Do you not put private information in there?
So I would not include any, I did chief compliance work at my last firm. So I was that person that was telling people what they could and couldn't do. I definitely would not include any, personal information. Anything you would not email to a client, I would not include in Loom because you just can't secure it or encrypt it. And the Loom videos, because you would be emailing those to the client, they would just be retained and archived the same as your emails would. And I don't know if you work with a compliance company that archived, but they would know it would just be archived like any other electronic communication.
Okay, great. And then my second question is, and Jared alluded to this a little bit, where they have three different onboarding processes depending on their type of client. We kind of have two segments, a higher end and a lower end.
Okay.
Any advice you can give on that front as far as what areas you might make different or to not make it more confusing because you have two instead of one?
Yeah. So this is where, and it sounds like you have the two different tiers for your clients. And I'm a huge fan of having one central workflow that branches out depending on what your different tiers are. So, you know, for your higher net worth clients, you're obviously going to have a couple of steps in your process that the, you know, second tier clients wouldn't be getting. So we just built those out when we were doing our workflows as like a separate branch item. So it would be like the first decision tree, is this client A or B? And then once we had that, it branches off. It's one main workflow, but it had different decision trees built into it because we wanted one centralized workflow, one centralized system, not two separate workflows. But we just customized that workflow to say, if they belong to this category, this is the path that we're taking. And these are the extra items, you know, built into that. And then if they're in this tier, this is what their path looks like.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. It definitely was much easier. And the team had an easier time following it. And there wasn't that confusion. There wasn't a wrong workflow being assigned to them. It was one main workflow for everyone. It just depended on what tier they fell into.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much.
Of course. And I think, guys, we may be over time. Do we have? So oh, good. Okay, great.
We can do 1 minute.
Perfect. Yeah. Awesome. All right, Joseph, let's, did we unmute him? Great. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Mine might be slightly longer question. So if we need to come back to it, I'm fine with that. But my question is really about like the bottlenecking relating to, you know, the bridge between adopting like a one page prospect process that is one page plan that's kind of like vague general areas, and then getting all of the analysis done without it being consuming. I'm a one man shop. So not team members.
So is my husband too. So he wears all the hats.
Yeah. And so I think, so I'm going to be launching away from a BD where I had a certain build a 90 page report plan requirement. I'm going to have more flexibility, but all of my background is getting all the analysis done for the client, you know, mm-hmm. which is time consuming. And so I'm struggling with how do I build a really scalable process in an environment where I'm probably not going to be able to do like 5 meetings for implementation because the right. people I'm working with aren't going to have the day-to-day flexibility of their schedules to accommodate that.
Absolutely. So Joseph, what I will ask, because this is a more in-depth question and I definitely have ideas, but I want to find out more about, you know, your niche, your type of client, because that all falls into it. So if you don't mind, I would love to send you a link to just do like a coaching one-on-one so we could spend a little more time on this and come up with a solution. Because definitely, I mean, like I said, off the top of my head, I have suggestions, but I really want to find out more about your day-to-day, the firm. I understand that you're a solo practitioner, so that plays into it. Yeah. But I wouldn't do your question justice trying to answer it. So if you don't mind, I'll send you that Calendly link and I would love to talk to you further about it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Appreciate it.
All right. Awesome. Awesome. And then Jonathan, let's see.
Hey, I actually just had a quick question, whether the Limitless site is down during the retreat. Mm-hmm. I was trying to grab some of the resources referenced in the presentation slides.
We have Allison here. What's up?
It is not down. So I'm going to look at your account on a break here, probably at lunch, and just see if something has occurred that shouldn't. So I will look into that for you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Allison. Okay, thanks. All right. Awesome. Okay, perfect. All right, guys. Well, with the remaining, you know, just if we could spend a couple of minutes, I would love to just have a discussion on what you thought about with this exercise, like where you feel, do you feel better about where your process is? Was it helpful in finding the gaps that need to be bridged? But I would love to have more of a discussion and just see what your thoughts were. 2 minutes. Okay, Allison, 2 minutes. So, Joe, awesome. Hold on 1 second. Let me unmute you. Thank you for offering. Okay, great. Yes. And then we'll go to Christian next. Perfect.
I thought the whole process was very good in terms of all the different ways to do it. There's a checklist in the Word document that goes step by step. And then there are all the examples of different firms, steps 1 through 5 or 1 through 6. And really being open and communicating with the new client as they're onboarding about what I'm doing, what they're doing, et cetera, is just very helpful and makes them trust, build trust and confidence in everything.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And again, it's like any places we can get the automatic trust equity, because unfortunately, you know, whether we want it to happen or not, there's probably going to be a chance we have to withdraw from some of that trust equity at some point. So not to lose that on the easy steps is you know, key to all of that. So thank you so much for sharing. And Christian, let me unmute you. Hi, Christian.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Good to see you too. I think this process has been incredibly helpful because I had a lot of ideas and kind of pieces all thrown out together, but just seeing the process and the examples has really helped me. I've got my little Notion screen database screen set up and I'm just mapping everything out. Even if it's something, it's like, okay, here's all the things I want to do. And then I can tag them with phases and say, okay, this stuff has to happen first. And just really getting it all somewhere to start is going to make be a huge help for not only me, but also my team. Just saying, okay, here's all the things we need to do. And, you know, here's the rough order they need to be done in. And then we can workshop it from there and, you know, practice in public a bit and at least have something down.
I love that. And especially the last firm that I was with, we were building out workflows from scratch. So what I did was set up separate meetings with the team members that we're going to, because anytime I've built out workflows or worked on them, I always had the tasks be role specific versus person specific. And that's because you want your workflow to be scalable. So as you grow or as your team members change, your workflow is still relevant. But I loved having separate meetings like with the client service team or trading where they were involved and we were kind of brainstorming together because they brought pieces that I may not have been aware that they do on a day-to-day into that. And again, it made everyone feel like when we, you know, roll that workflow out, that they all had some ownership in doing it and real clarity to it too. So, but I love that you're starting to work on that and definitely keep us posted on how it's going.
What you just suggested in terms of assigning it by role, I didn't even think of to add that in now. So now I can add that field in and just filter it a little more.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. Great. Awesome. All right. Anyone else? Okay, great. Danny, hold on one second. Okay. Should it let him know? There we go. All right, we got you, Danny.
Yeah, I just wanted to say this is my second year in Limitless, and I went to work at this after this retreat last year, the second retreat. I just finished testing all the automations for this. It was a lot of work for anyone.
Oh, yeah.
A solo RAA. The hardest part was building the workflows from scratch and thinking about at every step of the process. And this is from when a prospect books the first meeting all the way through when they become a client. Thinking about all the different outcomes, like people no show, people don't give you this. And then if you're thinking about, you know, the people that if you have staff or assistants or whatnot, what tasks are you delegating? How are they getting notified? At what point in the process? It was a lot of work. I tried to outsource it. And I talked to Kristen with the RAA Oasis. She's like, this has to come from you. I was really bummed about that. I tried to avoid it as much as possible, but it was a lot of work to build it out. And now that I got it automated, it feels pretty good. And I think, you know, if you're going to automate this stuff, you need to have the automations for one retainer because there's a lot of automations involved if you really want it to kind of work like a pretty
smooth, yeah.
Like I'm pretty happy where I'm at now. And I don't know, just anyone that's going to go down this rabbit hole, it takes time, it takes a lot of time and effort. So I just want to give my two cents just because I finished doing this. So
no, and that's such a good point, Danny. But I would love to hear a little further down the road as you've been using it to see how it's alleviated, you know, anything falling through the cracks or, you know, increased capacity. But it definitely is what people don't take into consideration with workflows is there's a testing period, there's a training period. But also it's processes are a process. It's going to be ongoing, you know, and you heard Jared talk about it. It's always going to be evolving. You know, you might start implementing a new tech software, you know, or a new tech stack, and you have to have that work into your workflow. So again, it's not kind of a set it and forget it, but hopefully you can get it to a point where you can start seeing the benefits of the work that you put into it.
Yep. And then one last thing I'll say is, you know, and I had a virtual assistant last year, part-time and try to integrate her into this and with the task. I'm about to let her go pretty soon after surge meeting. So that's another thing to consider, you know, who you're bringing into this process and making them part of it and tasks. Make sure that it's, to your point, have the process in place where someone can come in, kind of step in and take over for that person. So
yeah. And that's such a good point. And hopefully the way that you've built it out too, I always look at workflows as being almost like a electronic training manual,